Well, today it gives me great pleasure to be with a great gentleman who has, of all things, a mass background. You know, I have a great admiration for people that have a bachelor in mass, you know, and he's actually won an Outstanding Educator Award and British Columbia Association of Mathematics Teachers. Now, when you talk real estate, isn't that the most important thing, that you understand the mass? And certainly when Christian took over his father's business as a financial advisor, he inherited some 40 years worth of experience as financial planning. But he had a special interest in real estate, and that's where we, of course, at the Real Estate Action Group and at OSBAS, we're always very, very interested. Now, he brings mass to the table. He brings a love for real estate to the table. And, he has created financial education videos on YouTube, and he volunteers locally and abroad with his philanthropic project. His name is Christian Dine, and welcome, Christian.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Ozzy. It's always a pleasure to be in your presence because I, too, learned so much from you.
Well, thank you so much. Well, as a financial advisor, why do you believe average people who invest in real estate will always outperform those who primarily invest only in the stock market?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, for many of your listeners, probably many of them have already agreed with this. They realize that they invested in the stock market, maybe in their TFSAs and RSPs, but they've also invested in properties themselves. You know, 5-10 years later, they realize that their real estate is worth significantly more than their stock portfolio. But, in the book, which we'll talk about later, that I wrote, I kind of highlight it as the 5-to-1 rule. And many people may have seen this before. And that rule is basically, if you're putting 20% down payment on a property and that property goes up by 10%, your money has actually gone up by 50%. So that's the 5-to-1 rule. So really quickly, that's one reason why. And that's, of course, leverage, because you're able to leverage against it. 30 years later, 30-year amortization, you own the whole property. In year one, you own 20% of it. Year 30, you own the whole thing. And it kept growing and growing and growing. And of course, real estate, you know, in Canada, you know, will grow, depending on the market, somewhere between probably 4-9% annually. If you're in a high growth area like Vancouver, Toronto, my numbers in the book showed, you know, hovering around 8-9% is our annual growth rate. But just if you use Canada as a cross section, we're still around 4-6%. So I feel that real estate investors, for the average Canadian, will always perform stock investors for the average Canadian. They don't have this form of control. For the do-it-yourselfers, I'll invest in the S&P 500. I'll invest in Apple. Well, you don't have much control over what Apple does or what the S&P does. I buy a piece of real estate. I could add value to it. I could analyze it. I could leverage against it. I could negotiate on it.
No question. The whole question of leverage usually is forgotten by anyone that makes a direct comparison. People say, well, I can put $200,000 in the stock market and I can get margin. You can never get the margin that you have in real estate. You will invest into $1 million property with $200,000 down. And if in the stock market, I invest $200,000, the stocks go up 10%, I make, you know, $2,000 or $20,000. But if I buy $1 million piece of property and it goes up 10%, I make 100% on your money. So no question about it. But so what mistakes do the average Canadians make if they're sort of on their own without guidance?
Yeah, that's a great question, because usually the do-it-yourselfers, the people who want to do everything on their own, I think they're leaving too many opportunities on the table because there's too much lack of information that they have. Like somebody who says, well, Christian, I've done it on my own and I built a multi-million-dollar portfolio in real estate. Well, the only thing is that it could even have been greater, or maybe some of the mistakes you made could have been avoided. And that might be, you know, someone who's investing for 10 or 20 years. But let's fast forward to when they're in retirement. Let's fast forward to when they pass away. Have they done the traditional financial planning that's needed? They might have, you know, a 20-30% capital gains tax bill waiting for them with that, because of the lack of planning, because they did it on their own and they were so busy just buying, they didn't realize, oh, I thought my accountant would do the tax planning. You know, Did they set up a trust? Did they set up an operating company? Was there a way to have leveraged it? Maybe they could have done even more. I just find it's the same argument when I hear a physician who doesn't have a family doctor themselves. They said, well, I'm a physician. Why would I need a family doctor? The smart ones actually have one, because what does a family doctor do? They're going to do an annual checkup on your blood pressure. They're going to do an annual checkup on your, but for physicians, like, well, I know what I'm doing. He says, when was the last time you checked out yourself? He says, well, never. I feel fine. Same thing with a real estate investor.
Sure.
They're just buying real estate, And then did they take a pause and they look and says, you know what? I am pretty concentrated in one area. I'm doing well in that one area. Or I do all of my mortgages variable. It's always worked for me. I did all my mortgages variable. Well, you know, I have clients that they did every single mortgage variable. They bought 6 properties within 2 years. And right now they are drowning.
They're underwater. Yeah.
They're all underwater, you know. And when I'm looking at it as an advisor, I'm sort of pointing out the dangers. I'm pointing out, you know, the things that they're not seeing. So I, like anything else, if you try to do everything on your own, you're going to be stepping over dollars to pick up pennies once in a while. You're going to be missing an opportunity you didn't see, or a strategy you didn't see. I always say, you know, we should all have a financial advisor in the same way we should all have an accountant, in the same way we should all have a mechanic, in the same way we should all have a doctor. But sure. Finding the right one is the trick.
Well, and so too, even Tony Robbins says, every basketball player has a coach, you know, everybody that's of any kind of successful. And he says, you wouldn't believe who I coach. That's Tony Robbins said, you know, people pay me $20,000 a month for one phone call. You know, their whole idea is that you need an outside opinion, somebody that's impartial, that understands your own circumstances, your financial circumstances, and your goals. So no question about it. So, are you encouraging clients to buy real estate in this interest rate environment then?
You know, the quick answer is, when is the best time to buy real estate? And the answer is always ongoing. The trick is where and the what. So if you were to say, and this is something that I get, they said 2023 was a terrible time to buy real estate. The interest rates are too high. There were no deals out there. The price had not come down well enough. Well, are you saying not one single person who bought investment real estate in 2023 is going to make money in the future? Of course not. But it was finding the right one. In certain environments, it's harder to find the right property or the right real estate. But, you know, that quote by Winston Churchill, never let a good crisis go to waste. You know, in 2020, when COVID hit, terrible time to buy real estate. Terrible time. Absolutely not. It was a wonderful time. Wonderful time, because people were scared. They were trying to get rid of things. They couldn't afford things. They couldn't rent things out. So things were at a discount. Now, when the markets were high, you know, oh, it's a terrible time to buy real estate. Things are too expensive. I've been hearing that story in Vancouver in 2011, in 2014, in 2016, in 2018. It's too expensive. It's too expensive. I think when it comes down a little bit, then I'll buy it. You'll be waiting on the sidelines forever. But really, how, if you're a do-it-yourselfer, then you know that there's always an opportunity out there. The hard part is finding it. If you're not a do-it-yourselfer, are you working with the right advisor who's actually going to show you the deal? It might be expensive. It might be a 35% down payment. It might even be a 40% down payment. But if somebody can analyze this and say, no, this is a great deal. This is a great IRR. This is a good cap rate, good cash flow. You might not get it at 20% down, but this is a good solid investment. That's the person who's going to say, yes, it was a good time to buy in real estate. I'm glad that I bought the real estate at the time. It didn't look like the right deal at the time, but I had this impartial advisor to help me to close on that opportunity.
Yeah, no question. I mean, in all my life, I hear three things. One is, every year, how many realtors in the business? Two, the young people can no longer afford it. And then three, I wish I bought 5 years ago. You know, it's always that, when was the best time to buy? Yeah, it's now, right? But buy the right thing, not everything. And understand yourself, do you want to be an investor and look at the long term? Or are you on a flipper? I mean, if you're buying a house right now or a condo in Vancouver, And I'm not sure that you agree, but in Vancouver right now, you're not an investor. If I spend $1.5 million on a condo and rent it out at $3,000 a month, by no measure is that investment. It might be a great flip, though. In this regard, I'm a flipper. I'm looking to make a profit on selling it at a profit, or we call it a shark. If you're a shark, then you want to. People always come, Ozzy. When you find a good foreclosure, call me. Sure, I will. I just met you in the hallway. I will call you, right? And that is a good foreclosure. You're taking somebody else's house away. But maybe what you should do is go to court and sit in and learn a little bit about it. Anyways, the point is, you're always learning is always good. And we have a real estate action group, and we're very fortunate to have you as a member of that action group, where everybody meets every month. And the questions sometimes seem simple, but they're very important that we understand them. And I think you went to the great lengths to write a book,
yes,
trying to clear up the thinking process of growing wealth through real estate. What inspired you to do that?
So the book that I've just recently completed in 2024 is called Break Your Wealth Ceiling. And it's subtitled How Ordinary People Have Created Extraordinary Wealth Through Real Estate. It is available on Amazon, but what inspired me to write the book, it's essentially a story with examples. And it's of how wealth was created from members of my family, also from clients of mine, as well as friends of mine, colleagues. And like one great story is, I call it the three wise men. And there are three teachers that I taught with in my first career. One was the counselor, high school counselor. One was a math teacher in my department. And the other one was the art teacher. And all three of them had retired early. All three of them had multiple properties that were generating cash flow. All three of them had rec properties in sunny destinations. And none of them had a side job. And none of them had a side hustle or a business. They were just teachers. And if you compare, I would call it not even the 1%, the 0.1% of the teaching industry. When you compare it against the 99.9, these are hardworking teachers, wonderful people who are leaning on their RSPs and their pensions, but they're going to have a very, very different story when it comes to retirement and the helping of their own children. And that's like a premise of, well, how did these three people do it? There's only one way, real estate. There really is only one way. And they did it in a very safe way. They themselves had a mentor, perhaps in the form of their parents, perhaps in the form of other people that were doing it. I wanted to write a book to say it is possible for, if it's possible for a high school teacher, it is possible for you. Except the how and the when and the why, and that's where the book kind of comes into play. And it inspired me because another story through the book is my mother, my aunt, and my uncle. These are three people that immigrated from the Philippines at the same time in the early 70s. These are people who survived the 80s. Two of the three lost their homes to the interest rates of the 80s. They had about the same number of kids. They had a very similar job, professional job, similar income. None of them made over $100,000 a year. But the fast forward now, they're all in their 70s. One of them has over $10,000 a month in rental cash flow coming in. That same one has set up their kids and their grandkids with education, fully paid, and housing in the form of a down payment or fully paid for some of them. That is the Canadian dream. That is like, I want a better life for my family. I want to come here. I want prosperity. I want to set people up. Those children and grandchildren are at such an advantage. They no longer have to figure out their student loans because they don't have any. They no longer have to figure out, how am I going to afford a home and down payment? They have a down payment and can afford it. For me, I have three daughters. I'm going to set them up in the exact same way, but it has been done through real estate. Real estate will solve our real estate problem. Stocks cannot solve a real estate problem unless you are investing an enormous amount in your stock portfolio, which I also don't encourage as well. So that's what inspired me to write the book. I'm trying to get as many people to read it as possible. In the same way, when you wrote books, Ozzy, you were trying to give information to Canadians and say, this is accessible to you. Please read this book. What you do with it is now up to you. But that was the purpose of my book.
Just if you're watching this on our video channel, you know, go down in the comment section. The title of the book and where you can buy it is right there. And if you're listening to it, a podcast, just send me an email, oz@juroc.com, and I'll put you together, because this is so important that we get good advice. It's funny, people always say, you know, you need a mentor or you need an advisor. And then they say, well, you know, some great personality, a Mahatma Gandhi or somebody should be my mentor. Well, he can't. He's dead. You need a life mentor. You need somebody that you can pick up the phone and call and say, what do you think about this? I'm thinking of buying that. Or maybe he has a math question like myself. That would be the big thing. How does that work out? But the point is, you need an advisor that's accessible. And so how is your financial practice different than traditional advisors?
Yeah, like first and foremost, a traditional financial planning practice will invest your money. And there's something called an MER, which they will probably be compensated from it. So if you have $1 million portfolio and a 1% MER, well, that's $10,000 annually that they're making off of your $1 million portfolio. And what are they doing? They're investing the money. They're probably doing a good job with it. Otherwise, you'd leave them and go with someone else. And they're growing that money. And I want to say somewhere between 6 to 8%. You know, that they should be, or they should be getting you at least 6 to 8% if they're taking a 1%. But many people, like, they, if you wanted more than that, or you wanted to branch outside of just the equity markets, well, what opportunities do you have? So my practice is different. Is first and foremost, no one has to invest any money with me. They don't have to turn over their RSPs or TFSAs if they have any. They don't have to invest, you know, $1 million portfolio with me, because I'm a fee for service. So the fee for service model is very, very different. It's very similar to the way you compensate your lawyer or your accountant. They're providing you with a service and they are charging you a fee. So our fees range between how much people want from us. Do they want us to just get them financially organized, or do they want us to analyze their real estate? Or do they want us to show them real estate? We come across deals all across Canada, the US, and in Mexico. The level of service at that top tier that we provide is actually showing and providing the analysis of the deals. And the way that our practice is incredibly unique is we're not compensated in the form of a commission, because we're not realtors. We're not mortgage brokers. We're just the people analyzing and showing you the deal, analyzing and showing you the deal, and then connecting you with the opportunity of where we found the deal. We deal with over 20, probably closer to 30 real estate teams in three countries, Canada, Mexico, and the US. And these are usually Canadian-based teams that happen to be able to provide real estate opportunities in these other countries, as well as in Canada. They're just sending us deals. They're sending us opportunities. We're analyzing them. We're vetting them. We're seeing if it fits a profile. We're doing our own research on them. And then, of course, we're showing it to clients. So that way, a lot of these guys who are trying to do it on their own, maybe they come across 4 or 5 properties per year. Well, we're coming across a minimum of 20, probably closer to 30 to 40 per year that are investment ready, but they go quickly. You know, if it's a good deal, they're going to go quickly. So it's a fee for service, but it's planning fee for service. So not only will we help with the real estate side, you also need your retirement plan. You also need to analyze, are you under or over insured? You also need to look at your cash flow and your budget planning. You also need to figure out how am I going to pass this wealth on to my children? So that's all of the traditional financial planning, but now we've coupled it and catered towards the real estate investor.
Well, and certainly it's such a complicated world. You know, I mean, everybody right now, we seem to have a market that's almost psychology driven. Interest rates are going to go down and people are acting as if they already are down. So the market is going up, then it's going to go down, and it is so confusing. So to have somebody analyzing a deal of that you found, or maybe even one that they found, is got to be valuable. So when you talk about those three areas, what areas is your team finding deals that they recommend currently?
Sure. Like obviously we are based in BC. However, my partner is out in Ontario, but we have been focusing quite heavily on growing areas such as Alberta. So Alberta is one of the key focuses we've been focusing on for the last 2 years. And we were telling clients in certain areas of Alberta in 2022, we were saying, we really believe this is great. Here's some several different properties that we're really liking. And those, of course, of our clients who followed suit and bought it, they're all grinning from ear to ear. We were saying Fraser Valley back in 2013, 2014. We were saying Fraser Valley, Fraser Valley, Fraser Valley, Chilliwack, Abbotsford. And those who followed suit, and we put our money where our mouth is. Like, these are areas I also invest in. So currently Alberta is one area of focus. Certain areas of BC where we know that there is infrastructure going in, and there's a lot of money going in order to expand. But those areas that the real estate is quite inexpensive and the real estate is quite scarce. So when it comes to supply and demand, there's going to be we know there's a huge amount of demand. We know there's not enough supply. So we know what is going to happen with the housing prices. So we're sort of there. We're liking certain areas in Ontario. So those three provinces is where we're putting the majority of our stock. But we have real estate teams out in the Maritimes. I believe the Maritimes still has some opportunity. However, if you were there 4 years ago, you're grinning from ear to ear, especially if you were looking at multi-units. But now it's kind of that hidden gem on the multi-units where everyone thinks that, you know, it's passed. It hasn't quite passed. In the U.S., especially in areas where the Airbnb laws are not there, there's some great opportunities. We're looking at Arizona. We're looking at Nevada. I personally own in Nevada. Other areas in Mexico that we're looking at, and I know you're not a huge fan of Mexico, but you know, a lot of our clients, it's on their bucket list. They want, you know, the view that I have in my virtual background over here. So we don't want to say, no, don't do that. We want to say, how can it be done? Is it on your bucket list to own some sort of a property that you can visit yourself that will also generate rental cash flow? Well, with what's going on right now, especially in Mexico, with the train that's being built and it's going to connect all of those different communities, let's take a look at those undervalued properties over there. So I actually just got back from Puerto Vallarta. I was in Cabo San Lucas a couple of months ago. I'll be going out to Tulum in the near future, in the next couple of months. So I have the greatest job ever. I get to look at real estate. I get to analyze, and I'm a math guy. So me doing math, I'm grinning from ear to ear when I get to do math and my team gets to do math. So imagine doing the math in a location where there's some exciting real estate going on. And then I get to show this to clients, and my clients are compensating me for this. Like, we're talking, I'm living the dream myself, because I've always loved real estate. I love helping other people. I love helping other people build wealth. And I really like to do this for the average Canadian. You know, it's great to work with, you know, and we have clients like this with multi-million dollars of portfolio. So I'm helping rich people get even richer. You know, no one is going to cry or shed a tear for these guys over here. But I like it when I can help an average Canadian grow extraordinary wealth by giving them some new ideas, even if they do it on their own. I'm happy because I want them to realize that the problem is getting worse. You think that housing is unaffordable now? Wait one more generation. Wait till your kids try to buy a home, let's say in Vancouver or Toronto, and you want to be closer to your grandkids. Are you willing to give $1 million of your RRSPs in order for them to stay in the same neighborhood as you? Most average Canadians won't even be able to do that. And if they are able to do that, they really shouldn't do that. But that's what we're seeing now. And I want to start to tackle the problems much quicker. We can't do anything about real estate and how much it's going to grow, and it's going to grow. But what we can do is start to implement things in our own financial lives to start tackling the problems that we know are coming.
So a new client profile, what does that look like?
I guess there's kind of two tiers. I do have a team of people that work with a lot of younger clients who are just starting out. And that's their field of expertise. They want to grow the wealth. They want to do very traditional financial planning, and they want to keep the fees low because we want to grow wealth. We don't want to just cater to those with $1 million of portfolios. So our typical client right now are looking at sort of younger people with a little bit of real estate that want to grow more of it, or they're shifting their ideas beside, you know what, I do contribute to, 20% of my income towards my RSPs and TFSAs. Maybe I should be doing more real estate, but I don't know how. I don't know what that looks like. So we want to work with those younger clients as well who are starting out or who are starting to build wealth. But then, of course, we do have, you know, our top tier clients, those people who have already invested in real estate. They own multiple properties. They want to add more to it. Maybe they're getting close to retirement. They're trying to figure out how to pass this wealth. They still have the capability of buying more for the next decade. They just want to know where, and they want a level of expertise which their current advisor is not giving them, or they're not working with an advisor. So we kind of have that I'm starting out and I want to do more real estate, or I have real estate and I want to grow that wealth and, you know, deal with capital gains. So really the quick answer is anyone who likes the idea of fee for service, but also wants to build wealth in real estate. That's what the profile of our client looks like. And usually when we meet with them, we're actually not trying to convince them to work with us. We're first trying to see, is there a fit with what you're trying to do and what we do? Because our practice is actually quite mature. We're not actually looking for 1,000 more clients. We're looking for a select few of the right client looking for our service.
I think that makes a lot of sense. There has to be a meeting of the minds. I see it all the time in the real estate action group. You know, we have put thousands of people through it in the last 20 years, and sometimes somebody just hits it off. You know, there's that magic. That's why I always feel that after every night that we have, let's have a glass of wine and hang on a little bit so that we get to talk and see what other people do. Because it's one thing to know your financial advisor, but to understand how you just explain how you care for your clients and you have a real estate bent, you know, that is important that I learned that. Now, if somebody wants to learn more about you and your practice, how do they do that?
Yeah, I guess there's two ways. One is to visit the website, and it's at latitude-west.ca. It just basically gives a little bit more of our background. Another way is to read the book, because then you'll really get to know about our philosophy, about me, my background story, and what we're doing with our clients. So those are two quick ways. If you're ready to, or if you'll have questions that you need answered, then absolutely, we can book a time to talk. And if you wanted to reach out, we would usually go through my assistant, and, you know, my calendar can be quite challenging. But yeah, I would like to chat with people. And like I said, I'm trying to help as many people as possible. If you're at the stage where you want to take action, where, you know, I've been looking for an advisor team like you, you know, for a long time now, Christian, let's book a meeting. If you're looking, let me just understand a little bit more about what you do and how you do it. Then maybe let's start with the website. Maybe let's just start with, you know, reading the book, maybe seeing a couple of the videos which we produce. But I think it's that stage of the relationship with, well, what stage are you at? Even if we were to onboard a client, they said, oh, I love the ideas of real estate and I really, really want to grow my wealth in real estate. But if I didn't think you were actually going to make a purchase in the next 2 years, I actually wouldn't take you on as a client. Mm-hmm. You know what? Yeah. When you have an action group, I have an action practice. There's no point in paying me a fee if you're just going to sit on the sidelines. You're going to be upset with the result. I'm going to be upset with the result. I'm going to say, I showed you 20 properties that fit your profile this year, and you didn't take action on one single one. Why on earth are you working with me in my practice? You could just be doing this on the sidelines. And just I want to work with people when they're ready to make a move.
Well, that's why the whole focus on our group is the word action. You know, we start out the year, every year we have an action plan. And I watched some of those plans. They are marvelous. I mean, they're typed out uniquely. They are, you know, they're just really great pieces of work, 20, 30 pages. And then I realized maybe 2 months later, so did you do all the things that you were going to do? Well, I haven't started yet, but next month I will. But what about that finely tuned action plan? I used to have the privilege to run a very large corporation, and we had 320 branches, and we would budget and work for months to get the next year planned and everything ready. And we always had this action plan. And we'll go into a branch and said, let's take a look at the action plan. You want to see my action plan? Well, yeah, remember we did this thing together, and then they have to look everywhere to find it. And in the end, the actions weren't taken. Action is really everything. Just do it. You know, that's the important thing, you know.
Yeah, and that's what I almost find sometimes, you know, an analogy is getting a gym membership versus getting a personal trainer. If you get a personal trainer and you're paying them, you're going to make those sessions. You're not going to cancel on the session. Whereas if you get a gym membership, you might not go to the gym. You know, 5 months has passed by. You paid 5 months of membership fees, but you never went to the gym once. So that's like me. I'm the coach. I'm the trainer. I'm the someone who's like, we're having a quarterly meeting. At the next quarter, this is the action plans that you have set out for yourself. I know what I need to do on my side. You need to know what you do on your side. And we're going to meet in a quarter, and we're going to see how far you got. You should have gotten pre-qualified by this point. There's three realtors I've set you up with. Like, you know, that's the type of work that we're doing over here.
No question about it. In fact, we ran our whole company on three words: commit, perform, measure. That is, commit yourself to a course of action. You don't want to commit yourself, that's fine. But don't fool yourself that you're actually going to grow into a certain direction that you want to. Commit yourself, then do what you committed to yourself. And then in short-term intervals, measure your results. And if I do it monthly and I see, well, a lot of things didn't work, okay, stop doing them. Though these things really worked, we'll do more of them. You know, it's a process. Now, you talked about young people, and maybe as a final thing, what advice would you give a young person that starts out now to build financial wealth?
Yeah, like I think the climate now for young people is wonderful. There is, and in my opinion, there is absolutely no reason why a young couple or a young person just graduated cannot build wealth in their generation. And the reason is because there is some wonderful information out there in the form of books, podcasts, YouTube, and then there, of course, is accessibility to advisors. I'm picking up new clients from different provinces. Pre-COVID, all of my clients were in BC. After COVID, I'm picking up clients across the country. And that's fantastic. We don't have to be in the same room together anymore. So if we have all this access, why would a young person be limited to the financial advice from a 2 mile radius of their home? You know, the advisor from the mall, they could pick up advisors in many different areas. So for young people, I would say, number one, figure out how you're going to grow your wealth. And if it is in the stock market, then you really should be reading more books on how you're going to grow that wealth. But if it's in the real estate market, which is what we're here talking about, who is going to be on your team? Are you going to join the OSBUS? Are you going to join the REAG? Are you going to be part of groups that are going to teach you about real estate? Now, am I going to, who's the right advisor to work with if I am going to choose an advisor? So I would start putting those pieces together if I was younger. And if you said, Christian, I'm almost starting from zero, well, read some financial planning books on how to save up enough for, let's call it, a down payment. What is the discipline I need? Okay, I need to take 20% of my income and pre-authorize, pre-debit it. But then during that time, don't just sit and wait on the sidelines. Get educated, read the books, come to your podcast, read my book, read your books, read as many books as you can. Don Campbell's book, you know, Rich Dad Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki's book. Get as educated as you can to pick a strategy. And then when you're ready, I got 50K, you know, or I've got 80K and I'm ready to do something with it. Then of course you take action. You might need someone or you might do it on your own. But if this is the strategy that's for you, you gotta start now. You got to start getting educated. But You know, I guarantee you that there are people graduating with their nursing degree, their teaching degree, their engineering degree. Right now in 2024, there are people immigrating to this country. They will be flying in. They've got a young family. They've got a suitcase and, you know, a couple of bucks to their name, and that's it. And in one generation, let's fast forward 30 years from now, those people will be wealthy. We've seen it time and time again. And you said, so someone in 2024 is under the same conditions as me, and in 30 years, they're going to be incredibly wealthy. I've got so many stories of that in my book. Why can't it be you? But what is it that they're doing? So the first thing I give advice to young people is get educated, figure out what your strategy is going to be. Don't just wander around life saying, I hope in 3 years I can own a home. I hope in 3 years I could be investing in real estate. Like, hope is not a strategy. You have to take action. You have to figure out these different pieces in order to make it work. And then don't beat yourself up so much. It's easier to do a small goal on a weekly basis. That's my thing. I call it the 1% rule. Just become a 1% better version of yourself. And if it's in the financial realm, what's 1% better? How am I in a 1% better financial situation each week? Well, you might say, I ordered your book. I ordered Ozzy's book. I subscribed to this newsletter. Great, you're 1% better than you were before. I read a chapter out of it. You know, I went to the bank and I pre-authorized 10% of my income to save up for something. I don't know what yet, but I saved up for something. That's 1% better. And I believe in the 1% rule because I'm a math guy. If you have an investment that is 1% better on a weekly basis, where will you be in 30 years right now? You'll actually be a billionaire, to be honest. The math compounds so quickly. But if we just say, if I'm a 1% better financial version of myself, you will be at the top tier of all of your peers. And that's exactly what happened with the story of the three wise men who were high school teachers. They were at the top 0.1% of all their peers within one career of being a teacher, because they slowly, 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 slowly did something consistently, which was look at real estate, invest in real estate. And then, of course, they also made money in the stock market. But in essence, I do think that young people have this amazing opportunity because of the information, because of technology. And, you know, it won't be from a lack of opportunity why they don't become wealthy.
Well, and I think you couldn't say it better. That's exactly it. It's sort of the small actions we take that turn into big results. You know, in all of my books, I always looked at the environment, and every environment that we went through in my life, and we went through some tough environments, it was the end of the world. Right now, it's the high interest rates. So then it was thousands of banks closed in the U.S. Then it was an Asian crisis, a Russian crisis, a Mexican crisis, a currency crisis. There's always some sort of a crisis. And yet, had you bought a piece of real estate, your own house, or small investment, in the middle of the disastrous time, as you pointed out, COVID was a good time to buy. The key is to look at yourself, absolutely buy his book, learn that 1% rule every week, and then get on with it and invest in real estate with good advice. Thank you so much for joining me, Christian. And I will have all his information, his website, his book. It'll be all on the website, on the YouTube channel and the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. And like I said, if you want to get to know me a little bit, it's latitude-west.ca. If you want to reach out, it's through my assistant. It's Jane, J-E-A-N, like blue jeans, Jean, at latitude-west.ca. And if I can help you in any way, even on just the advice side, I'm happy to do so.
That sounds like a plan and an invitation. Take care. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you.